Contraband Classified. Let's go.
This is Contraband Classified. Sucker, 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 sucker free radio. And right now you're checking out my homies, Amon Jackson and Kalonji Jamachanga.
We are Salem Songs.
Yeah!
Contraband Classified.
This is Contraband Classified Radio. Today we're here with Daruba Ben Wahad, Black Panther leader, BLA leader, and former political prisoner. We're here today to discuss the number of murders committed by police on a national level, and we want to get to the bottom of it because of the fact that there are a lot of quote-unquote black leaders and what we call gatekeepers, rather, who are out there not only in Ferguson, Missouri, in New York, in Ohio, Detroit, and a number of other places, pretty much telling the people to just remain calm and that it's isolated incidents, so on and so forth. We want to have Daruba's take on this piece today. Daruba, how's everything going today, brother?
Everything is good. Everything is good, I guess. with this, you know, with the stuff that's happening right now and the incidents that are happening around the country, it's becoming very difficult to wake up, you know, with any degree of, optimism about the future.
I can dig that. Here in Ferguson right now, it's a lot going on. We have the young brother, the 17-year-old Michael Brown, who was gunned down by police in his neighborhood. Another unarmed black child, young man child. What's your take on that? Right now, you know, we've seen over the past several days, there's been folks rebelling in the streets. There's been, you know, some serious responses from the community itself. You know, what's your take on it? We see a few gatekeepers have slid up in there and trying to douse the flames. You know, what's your look on that? What's y'all take?
Well, I mean, the unfortunate murder of in Ferguson, Missouri, of Michael Brown is only one of many police killings and murders and brutal actions that's been occurring since time immemorial. I mean, I can't repeat this over and over again, but every riot and rebellion in the 60s was caused by police murders or rumors thereof or police, so-called police brutality. So it should be apparent to black people by now, 40 years later, that policing in America, when it comes to people of African ancestry, is about communal terrorism, is about the state terrorizing the black community into fear, into useless protests, and into obviating and denigrating their right to defend themselves and neutralizing the community's right to police itself. And so we have to question the very notion of policing today, because it arose out of these rebellions in the 60s. So when we see the spontaneous rebellions today and we hear the same rhetoric brought by black leaders like Sharpton and these other Negro leaders who call for calm, who tell you that we're going to take this to court, and then you have the attorney general say he's going to investigate the case to see if there was any violations of Brown's civil rights. When you're dead, you can't say, that's the ultimate violation of your rights when you get murdered. Right. So I don't know how this violation is a civil right that's violated rather than a human right to live, to defend yourself. So what we're dealing with in our community is an inability of people, ordinary people, to understand what's going on and therefore what should they be doing. And that inability is fostered. That inability is constructed, reinforced, and led by the likes of the Al Sharptons and the Barack Obamas, who are telling us that violence per se This is just, they're just talking about spontaneous mass violence. I imagine that Al Sharpton and President Obama are not opposed to righteous retribution, because Obama claims righteous retribution as his motive for killing people around the world who he feels violated American sovereignty, who he feels may have killed American citizens. Obama is not opposed to retribution now. Okay, so I imagine that a supporter of Obama, like Al Sharpton, is down with violent retribution, and that he's really opposed to spontaneous violence, which achieves nothing. And I would agree with both of them on this account, if that's what the position he's taking, is that nothing could be achieved from rioting in the streets. And I agree with that. I think that what has to be understood and reconcile is the fact that the police in the United States have a function, and their function is not to serve and protect this people, it's to serve and protect property and the ruling elite and the corporate interests of society, of American society, pure and simple. Its job, the police's job in the black community, in minority communities, in immigrant communities, is quite different. It's to control, to intimidate, and to direct all forms of political, social, and economic activity in the community. In other words, the police are in our community to terrorize us. And the reason why, and we know this is a fact, we know this is because the police have evolved over the past 30 or 40 years an entire representation of themselves in the political arenas of the United States. They have their own Bill of Rights. They have been heavily unionized. Their unions exert an enormous amount of pressure in the state, local, and up on capital, in the state, local capitals, and in on Capitol Hill are the police unions. And in this case of Brown, we see where that power and that clout really lies. Because in the case of Michael Brown's murder, the police have not released the name of the individual who murdered Brown. They have not talked to one of the major witnesses as of yesterday, who was with Brown when he was killed. They haven't even talked to him, but yet they're investigating this issue, which tells us that the police in America exists on a whole different level than the rest of us, than the rest of the population. They no longer work for the taxpayers of America. They are the new centurion guards. They are the new Praetorian guards of finance capital. And their job and their function is clear. Their function and their job is to protect the interests of the state, and in our case, in the case of black people who have evolved and who have came out of a whole history of slavery, of several hundred years of slavery, a century of Jim Crow, and then half a century of de facto and de jure segregation. In our communities, their role is radically different. It's to control, intimidate, and murder us. So police brutality is not incidental. It will continue. It will go on and on until we take control of the police in our community, until the police live in our community, until policing in our community is part and parcel of public safety, that the public participates in the safety process, the security process in their own community. I'm not talking about civilian complaint review boards. There was a civilian complaint review board in New York when Gardner was choked to death by the NYPD. Now all of a sudden they're reinvestigating and reviewing the thousands of complaints that the police used illegal chokeholds and illegal violence on people who were stopped and frisked. Now all of a sudden it's important. Why? Because the focus was brought on the police conduct by this outrage. And this outrage was taken and is taken by the likes of people like Al Sharpton, by the likes of the adherents of Obama. They take this rage that people have, and rather than turn this rage into an empowering emotion, something that empowers our people politically, something that makes this boy's death not be in vain, he twists it around to tell us that we should be calm, because if we get out and we do anything contrary to the principles of the family of Michael Brown, then we are somehow being opportunistic. We are somehow using this person's name for our own individual political agenda. And that the family doesn't advocate violence. And that the family doesn't advocate that people take to the streets. Okay? But the family is not the issue. If the family is a non-violent, peaceful family, Allah is merciful. It's sad what happened to them with their child. And I'm outraged by it. But I am not beholden to their emotions in order to understand the politics of what has to be done right now. Right. When we take to the streets and demonstrate, we're not just demonstrating for Michael Brown. We are demonstrating for all of the future Michael Browns, all of the potential Michael Browns. When we take to the streets and organize for community control of the police, we are not denigrating the image of American democracy. We are not denigrating the image of the Brown family. So what I'm saying is, those brothers and sisters who feel the direct action should be taken should understand that Michael Brown wasn't murdered because he was a member of the Brown family. He wasn't murdered because he was a college student. He was murdered because he lived in a community that was occupied by a racist police department, a foreign army, a militarized police department that saw all of the citizens of that community as potential terrorists and criminals and treated them that way. That's the bottom line. And so all of this rhetoric and this crap about how we need to rely on the courts and the civil society and the legal system to do its job, we saw what the job it did in Trayvon Martin's case. We saw the job it did in the Bell case. We see the job that it's doing in the Gardner case. And we also saw the job that it did when it electrocuted this brother in Georgia for the murder of a policeman, despite evidence that he was innocent.
Right.
So they electrocuted the black man with evidence that he was innocent.
Right.
When the Pope the Pope came out and said that this man's life should be spared, and he was executed anyway.
Right.
Which tells you the political clout and the power of the police and their unions, because he was killed for no other reason than that his victim was a cop. If his victim was anybody else, he probably would have got a commute. We'd probably be talking about him right now.
Right. Now, you know, it's interesting because you speak about, you mentioned Al Sharpton, you mentioned the Michael Brown case, of course, and you also mentioned Eric Gardner, which are two cases that Reverend Al has gotten behind. Now, over the past few months, we know that, you know, he was implicated, or he was exposed as wearing a wire in the cases with the mob. And we know that, you know, it is alleged that he wore a wire against one of the comrades, Asada Shakur, you know, trying to get her trapped up. That all got washed under the bridge, and he's back in action, you know, bigger, better, stronger than ever. What do you feel his role in these cases are, because of the fact that, you know, we see that, you know, he's telling us what the family wants, right? And we are respectful and you know, we respect, you know, family wishes and all that type of stuff. But when it, as you pointed out, when it's a case like this where the police are murdering black children, black males, black adults, whatever, in our community, it goes beyond the invisible borders and boundaries of family. You know, it involves community. Like you said, Michael Brown wasn't murdered because he's a part of the Brown family. He wasn't murdered because he was going into, you know, planning on going to college. So what is the role of Al Sharpton? Because of the fact that many people are confused, you know, and we need to know, like, what, I mean, do you feel that he's a legitimate activist? Because I happened to be absolutely bored the other day, and I'm going through the car radio, and his show Keeping It Real comes on, right? And the first thing they say is America's number one community activist, or, you know, a civil rights activist, so on and so forth. What is his role? Because, you know, the people are confused. In a case like this right here, what purpose does he serve?
Well, the purpose that he serves immediately, and he's always served, is to diffuse any real development of unity in the black community around a radical alternative to the status quo. That's his whole job. His whole job is to redirect the energy, to redirect the politics, to define the issues and the parameters of the debate so that we go, so that we wind up marching down streets, chanting, you know, black political elite and middle class sympathizers are able to come to a demonstration, call up Al, and individuals like him arrange for a date and a time to be arrested, come to the demonstration, get arrested so they could appear on the 6 o'clock news, and so that their name could say celebrities are arrested in protesting Trayvon Martin verdict or whatever the case may be. Right. You know, so their role is very simple. It's the old role that the Negroes on the plantation played for the plantation master, is to make sure that the niggas on the plantation didn't get out of hand, didn't start thinking about real power, and most of all, didn't start thinking about marching on the plantation house and slitting the plantation master's throat. That's the purpose of the Al Sharptons. Now, whether Al Sharptons is a legitimate activist, I would argue that he is. I would take that he is a legitimate activist. He's a legitimate activist in the sense that he could not be encapsulated by the system. He could not be used by the system if he didn't enjoy a certain level of legitimacy and viability in the black community. And this is pointed out by the fact that almost all of these families, to my understanding, especially this last incident with the Brown family, asked for Al Sharpton. They called Al Sharpton, and Al Sharpton said himself on TV that he never volunteers to go to these cases. The people, the family, ask him to come and speak for them. Now, this tells you exactly why the Brown family, this tells you exactly what I'm talking about. If you have wrote out all of the radical traditions and struggles of black people and their contribution to where we are at today in society, in terms of integration, in terms of acceptability, limited acceptability or whatever, if you write all of that out of history, you know, then who else are the families going to call for? They can't call for a hair of Malcolm X, because nobody even knows that Malcolm X even existed. And if they did, they have this encapsulated notion of what Malcolm X was. I mean, Malcolm X is on a United States postal stamp.
Right.
Huh?
Right.
So I mean, he's being Malcolm, and the radical condition is claimed by the United States status quo, but it's not claimed by the black bourgeoisie and the black middle class. And you got to understand something. The integrationist movement was led by people like Al Sharpton. Okay, people have to understand that Dr. Martin Luther King, when he as he came out of this middle class assimilationist attitude and began to understand the United States as an imperialist power, as a war-making power, as a power that's violated the human rights and killed people abroad in unjust wars, as he became aware of this, he moved closer and closer to the working class. And when he died marching for working class sanitation workers.
Right.
Okay? But it's the black middle class, it's the black professional class and their children that have benefited from the civil rights movement the most. And these are the people right now that rush to these scenes, that dominate all of these scenes, that dominate the dialogues on television, that dominate the media, and that dominate everything when we start talking about these issues of police murder and police brutality. Okay, so the role of Al Sharpton is the same role that the CIA would use in Africa when it wanted to take over the mineral resources of a country. It will get its leaders, its middle class leaders, its most educated elite. It'll educate their children. It'll provide them with security. It will provide them with a platform and a network so that their voices can be heard, and so that they become the leaders of the country. And then they strike business deals with them. Ask Al Sharpton now why he no longer has to go around wearing a wire and begging for money from the mob or trying to get involved in selling drugs for the mob. It's because Al Sharpton is very wealthy now. And he's wealthy because of his activism. You have activists that are dirt poor that can't even pay the rent. And I ask you, which activist's activism is worthy of being paid by the state and being paid by the black elite, and which activist is worthy of being ostracized and demonized by the state? And you make your own decision.
So Al getting on the news saying he not a rat, he's a cat, was
he didn't miss a beat. He ain't missed a beat. In fact, I mean, I'm quite sure the Browns, who called Al Sharpton to be their spokesman, didn't know anything about this.
Right.
And if they did, they probably would have rationalized it. I mean, you have people rationalize it right now. After they hear this, they're going to rationalize this and say, well, if it wasn't for Al Sharpton, there wouldn't have been a Trayvon Martin trial. But the point is, if there wasn't an Al Sharpton, there might have been a more direct response to Trayvon Martin's murder. Okay? There might have been a response that the police respect the most. And we need to understand something. People that beat you and murder you and bully you and intimidate you don't respect you. Have no respect for you. And if you sit down without any political power to retaliate, without any political power to get justice, without any political power to make them feel that there are consequences for their actions, that anything that they give you is a deference, anything that they give you is a gift, what's going to come out of the Gardner case? The chokehold was already abandoned. They're going to talk about new training procedures have to come out of the case. What's going to come out of this boy's murder? That this particular town in Missouri needs more black police officers. Already they're talking about there's 53 officers in the town and only two of them are black. So now we're going to have more black police officers. We're down here in Georgia where the majority of cops are black and they run in the plantation. Right. So now we're going around in circles. More police officers in the black community, if they don't live there, is meaningless.
Right.
More police officers, more corrections officers in a system that mass incarcerates black folks, more black correction officers in that system doesn't mean anything. Mm. It doesn't mean anything. They're drawing a paycheck off of our mass incarceration. Okay, so they become stakeholders in mass incarceration. So they become the individuals that end up on these programs talking about how prisons should go. We electing people to office. We electing former cops to represent us in the city council. That's how scrambled up we are. And these cops are coming in talking about, yeah, I was on the police force for 47 years, and if anybody's qualified to talk about this, it's me. But for 47 years, that police force killed 47 young black men, and you ain't did shit.
Right.
You ain't said nothing. So now you're running for office talking about you know how it is, you know about racism, police should be doing this and should be doing that. And you vote, and people will vote for him. So my point is that people like the Martin family, people like the Brown family, people like Ferguson's family, they don't know about Al Sharpton's seedy past and opportunism. They don't know about it. All they see is Al Sharpton, the reverend, who's marching out there when families don't have nothing, who brings a little money to pay for the funeral, who brings a Jewish lawyer to represent them or a black lawyer to represent them. The fact that the lawyer that represented Trayvon Martin and lost the case because he didn't pursue that case the way he should, he wasn't aggressive in that case the way he should, the fact of the matter that he lost that case doesn't mean anything. Right. He's right there now with the Brown family representing them. He's going to lose that case too.
He's also the lawyer for Kendrick Johnson out in Valdosta, Georgia.
So you have lawyers who are activists. Let me put it this way. So you have some lawyers who may be well motivated, who may feel that their calling in law should be put to the use and the defense of black people, and therefore they get sucked in by people like Al Sharpton.
Right.
Or they get sucked in by a belief in the court system that they can make a difference, and they go into the courts and they fight for you. That's nothing wrong with them. And there's nothing wrong with them having that attitude. There's nothing better than a people's attorney. Right. And I know from experience that get in that courtroom to fight these people, you need someone that's on your side that's unafraid. Okay? That's a lawyer that's unafraid of the power of the court. That lets politics, your politics, lead your defense. Okay? Right. The Brown family has no politics. Al Sharpton is providing the mass line and the politics for this family and presenting it to the public as if this is their sentiments.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Nobody, no mother wants other children, wants other mothers to lose their child because they lost their child.
Right.
That's That's not what a mother's vibing on. That's why when you talk about a movement, you're not talking about the individual cases. You're talking about the collective situation. You're talking about the collective process. In America, black people are only allowed to rise up as high as all black people are allowed to rise up. And they set up these little examples, whether they're rich millionaires, whether they're black entrepreneurs, to say to us, don't give up, keep struggling, keep striving, get an education, and you'll be successful. Okay? And we've proven that getting an education doesn't immune you from the 9mm bullets of the popo. It doesn't immune you from the arrogance of the warrior cop in America. It doesn't immune you from the fact that your ass in America is grass if you don't have any particular, if you don't have no power. And that's where we are at right now. We are surrounded by misleaders and a comprador class, a middle class that is bent on taking us to destruction for their own personal aggrandizement and wealth and benefit.
You're listening to Contraband Classified Radio. This is your host, Kalonji Jamachanga, and we're speaking to Daruba Ben Wahad on the Michael Brown case and also gatekeepers such as Reverend Al Sharpton and a number of other different folks right now who are misleading this case, as Daruba said. The situation, this is a strange situation, this Michael Brown case. Because of the fact that they haven't released the name of the police officer, and as you pointed out, the young man who was the witness, I believe his name is Dorian Johnson, mm-hmm. His attorney has gotten on television on a number of different news programs, I understand, telling the world that, look, my client, who's a witness, hasn't even been interviewed by the police yet. Have you ever seen a situation like that? I mean, this is something that's unheard of to me. When you talk about a witness not being interviewed in a situation like this, what's your take on that? Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it is because the cops are lying as usual. But also too, you have to understand something, that the police unions, the police have a Bill of Rights that they fashioned and that they pushed through in the various legislatures around the country. And it was pushed through by their unions. And this Bill of Rights basically says that after an incident in which the police uses deadly force or some assault and he's being charged with this, that no one, that he has 72 hours where he doesn't have to answer any questions. Okay? So he has 72 hours to perfect his lies. And what is the history of this? What is the history of this 72-hour hiatus before a perpetrator, someone that's killed somebody else, can be talked to? Whereas when it comes to civilians, and I'm going to come to where that comes from, as it comes to civilians, though, on the other hand, when the police are investigating a murder or a homicide or some type of crime, the first thing they want to do is talk to eyewitnesses as soon as possible while the memories are still fresh in their mind. Okay, so there's a difference. There's a different criteria for a legitimate investigation as opposed to a bogus investigation, a pretense investigation that the police conduct whenever they investigate themselves when they have violated the law. Okay, and in the case of this particular cop, and in the case of these cops, we don't know the cop that beat this black woman senseless on the side of the road in California. We don't know the cops who in Florida recently were the family that was awarded the settlement to the police shooting in Florida. The family still doesn't know the name of the cops that killed their child. Wow. Okay, so this keeping secret of the names of police officers has its roots in a very fundamental human principle. This is a principle in Christianity. This is a principle in Islam. This is a principle in Judaism. Okay, and in Christianity, it's a principle of the Old Testament, not the new one. And that principle is, there is no justice without retribution. You cannot have justice without retribution. Reconciliation is fine, but reconciliation has to be something that the aggrieved and the aggriever agree to. Okay? And that should be an approach. That should be a very real approach, because there's nothing that's going to be gained when a murderer murders and then he's electrocuted by the state. The only signal that it sends is that there's going to be official retribution for murder. That's the signal it's sending. It's not sending a signal of rehabilitation, of reconciliation, of you realizing you took someone's loved one and you're going to try to make amends for it in real time, in real life, in while they're alive. No, it's about retribution. So what makes one think that these pigs could come into our community, murder our children, brutalize our children, terrorize us without any retribution? Okay, so what makes them think that today is because yesterday there was retribution. That when the police came into our community and did this to our community, they knew that when the sun set, that there was going to be retribution. They knew that there were brothers and sisters out there that did not give a damn about who they were with a badge and a gun. They understood that they kill us, that they murder us, that they intimidate us, and that wasn't going to stand. And that's what led to the police changing their whole attitude towards incidents like this. They created community relations offices and community relations institutions in order to better understand and interact with the black community, so that if they did make a mistake, if something did happen, that retribution was not forthcoming and automatic. And today, they have been very successful. So there is no retribution for these dogs, because they will hide behind the badge. They will hide their identity. They will hide all of these things. Their family is not going to suffer like the Brown family.
Right.
We're not going to be able to take demonstrators to his front lawn and make him accountable socially for his actions. We can't do that. We have to march to City Hall and appeal to a mayor. We have to march to Washington and appeal to a Negro president to say something, to do something. And when it comes time for him to say something, what does he say? We're all saddened by this tragedy, and we all, our hearts go out to the family, and we should all be calm and la-di-da-di, and that's it.
Right. We understand there was a second shooting in Ferguson. We're hearing about all these shootings. We see the youth are rising, and we see, you know, like you said, the Reverend Al's and so many other people are trying to stop that rise. What should the in these cases, in the Michael Brown case, in the case of John Crawford, the 22-year-old who was gunned down in Walmart for picking up a toy gun that they sell in their store and being murdered in the aisle that he's in with the merchandise that he's getting from them. what should the people do? I mean, Eric Garner case, so on and so forth. Because we get a lot of people hitting us up saying, you know, we want to do something. You know, what do we do? Do we march? Do we rally? We get some people say we're tired of marching, we're tired of rallying.
I'm gonna say something here. You know, marching and rallying has utility, but only when you have a movement, only when you have a mass movement, only when you have a popular movement does marching have any effect. Boycotts only work when you have the masses of people organized so that it has an economic impact, an immediate economic impact on the locality in which the boycott is being organized. Absent a movement, absent this type of mass organization, These things today in the 21st century are useless, because we see how marchers now, they're not even allowed to approach the buildings where they're protesting against. You could have senators sitting in the building or state councilmen sitting in the consul's office, and the demonstrators are five blocks away, cordoning off into a particular area. Sharpton is supposed to lead a march across the Verrazano Bridge, which is one of the largest bridges in America, into Staten Island, which is the home and the bastion of a lot of NYPD police families and stuff. So he was going to lead a march across the Verrazano Bridge, the Staten Island Bridge, from New York, from Manhattan, from Brooklyn, into Staten Island, where the policeman who killed Gardner is from. The police chief in New York, Bratton, contacts Al Sharpton and says, look, man, you know, if you lead a march across this bridge, you know, it's going to disrupt traffic. It's going to mess up, you know, public safety for hours and hours. This is one of the largest bridges. It's going to back up traffic all across New York. Why don't you take buses across the bridge and let them deliver you at the venue where you can demonstrate? Now, could you imagine being bussed across the Pettus Bridge when King went back to
Wallace and them.
Yeah, when he went when he crossed the Alabama.
Yeah.
Okay. So I mean, what if King said, "Okay, cool, man, we're gonna get beat up, you know, we're gonna get spit on by the Ku Klux Klan, we're gonna take a bus." You see? So the purpose of the demonstration was specifically to do that, to disrupt business as usual. That's to let people know that this issue is so important to us, and while it ain't important to you, we'll make it important to you. Your ass won't get to work this morning. You would have to deal with this fact that we live under this terror every day rather than this little inconvenience that you stuck in traffic. That was the whole purpose of the demonstration. Because it's not a part of a movement, so it can't be an ongoing thing. The boycott, the Montgomery boycott, was an ongoing affair that went on for days and days and days until the bus company was brought to its knees economically. Okay, this is not happening today because we have leaders like Al Sharpton and them, and these types of individuals who make sure that all of this rage and all of this animosity is directed towards empowering some Democrat in power, to verifying some Democrat in power. Every time a Brown or a Gardner invites a Al Sharpton to want to be their spokesman, he becomes a legitimate kingmaker in the Democratic Party. He becomes a asset to the Democratic Party of Hillary Clinton and Obama, and he has his pulse on the people, and he's a part of the people. This is what they're going to say. Okay? So we have to understand something here, that recently the police in mass went to a funeral. I believe it was in California. I'm not sure. It's California or Detroit. I forget. But I think it's California. There's this young brother by the name of Mixon. His last name is Mixon. He was pulled over by two California highway patrolmen. Okay? He waxed their ass. He shot both of them. Right? And escaped. They said they traced him to another house where he was boarded up in. And he killed two SWAT team sergeants that came to get him. And they wound up killing him. Now here's this guy. They said he was a criminal. There was a warrant out for his arrest. And I believe the warrant out for his arrest was for something basically not that, you know, not that serious. Could have been traffic. It could have been a violation of parole. Something like that.
Right.
But this man shot both police officers and shot the two SWAT team officers, and policemen came from all over North America, from Canada, from Toronto, from all over North America to the funeral of these police officers. You had helicopters that flew over from other venues to be at this funeral. There was 10,000 cops at this funeral. Now, how did they get there? Whose money was they using? Whose vehicles did they use? That's the taxpayers' money. They was at this person's funeral, and what it shows you is that the elevation of the police into the special brand of humanity in which their lives are sacred and our lives are insignificant has gone to the point where the state has allowed this massive amount of funds to be used as an outpouring of grief and sympathy, because this is an agent of the state. He is a guardian of the status quo. Okay, and he was murdered. But the point I want to make is about Mixon, because this guy who we know little about very, very likely understood that the police that were pulling him over would kill him. And we don't know what happened, because they dead and he's dead. And we know for a fact the SWAT team's coming in our house, that sometimes there's no means of surrender. That man knew that after those two policemen were killed, even if he didn't do it, he wasn't going to be allowed to surrender. Okay? The reason why I bring this up is when you say, what should people be doing? I'm saying right now, right here, the same thing that I've been saying for the last 40 years. You understand? There can be no reconciliation unless there's funerals on both sides. If there's only funerals on our side of the equation, there's no such thing as reconciliation, and there'll be no such thing as justice. Okay? So like my old brother said, you know, I ain't gonna go into that. That's kind of profane. But I just want to say that retribution, as a principle, has always been an integral part of justice, especially under the Christian, Islamic, and Jewish traditions. Okay? Right. Diplomatically, the United States said that when 9/11 happened, that those that were responsible for 9/11 were going to pay with their lives for it. They were talking about retribution. Justice, you remember that? You remember what Bush's words were? They were going to be brought to justice. Right. He used the word justice and retribution interchangeably. So why are we restricted to demonstrations, civil rights, marches, and there is no retribution? These crackers could murder us with impunity. They're armed to the teeth, and their SWAT teams are out there. They have a monopoly of manpower and weaponry. They have all of that. But there's one thing that we got that they don't have. We have masses of people. There's 40 million black folks in this country.
Right. Playing crackers advocate. We have these folks that say, you know, what you saying, you know, get people hurt, so on and so forth, and that sounds violent, this and that. What do you say to that? Because of the fact that, again, there's, you know, a lot of our folks, you know, we've read different comments. We have folks that pretty much make up every excuse under the sun to not even resist. Some people won't even march. You know what I'm saying? They won't even, I mean, they'll defend the situation or they'll justify it, you know, in saying something like, you know, we kill each other every day. I saw something that a rapper posted yesterday saying that we don't get outraged when we kill each other. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, I say they're not the same thing. That's the first thing. Any dope could see that. The murder by the state and murder because you got a beef with somebody over their shoes or their Jordans or because you don't like them or you had a beef at a club or because you're beefing over drugs is qualitatively different. Okay, but having said that, you know, all you got to do is go back and read France Fanon about self-hatred and how the natives readily kill each other. Then when it comes time to deal with the oppressor, they throw their guns away. Okay, because they fear the state, they fear the system more than they fear each other. But having said that, I want to address the larger issue that you raised there. That people say, well, you know that what you're saying could only lead to people being killed and people being murdered. What are we talking about here? We're talking about a brother that was murdered. There's so many of these incidents that have happened over the past 6 months. We can't even remember them all. So we're being killed and murdered anyway.
Right.
Okay? We're being shuttled through the police system anyway. Okay? We're going to prison at a phenomenal rate anyhow. Our children are being raised in this violent society anyway. Okay? So what do we really have to lose? Okay? When we look at this in that context. See, it's not possible, it's true, for everyone to step forward and perhaps do certain things a certain way. But it is true that any successful people's movement that does not have the capacity to exert itself physically on its opposition is never going to be successful, and it has never been successful. Now all we have is lawyers and preachers and inspirational speakers as leaders, okay? And they're the ones that's telling us how to handle this case, okay? They are the ones that's telling us how to deal with this. But the fact of the matter is, we are living in a militarized national security state. Okay? And the most glorified individuals, the most glorified class in this state is the Praetorian class, the elite military and police units. They are glorified as heroes. All of the rest of the cops, okay, on the beat, the knuckleheads in the police station, they're all anti-heroes. They're heroes with issues. Okay? But the ones that we see on TV, the ones that killed Osama bin Laden, they're all glorified as history. Last Man Standing, Stand Alone, all of these movies glorify these murderers. Okay, these are trained, cold, calculated killers. But they kill on behalf of the empire. They kill on behalf of the status quo. And because of that, they're heroes. So what I'm saying is, there are amongst us soldiers too. There are amongst us brothers and sisters who are tired of this, but what they don't understand is that without the capacity for retribution, we can't build an effective movement. And an effective movement can't be built without that capacity. So this goes hand in glove. Martin Luther King wouldn't have got all of the rap that he got, wouldn't have got all of the props that he got if Malcolm X didn't exist. Okay? The NAACP founded by Jews who felt compelled to come to the aid of victimized blacks, would it not have been relevant in the 20s and 30s when the Ku Klux Klan was burning and killing people if there didn't arise out of that organizations like the Deacons for Self-Defense and the Black Panther Party of Lowndes County? Okay, whenever we write out a radical alternative, whenever we write out the right to self-defense out of the entire equation, we are hamstrung. We are running a race with one leg. And that's the component that's missing right now. And that's why the dialogue doesn't proceed the way it is. That's why we're not getting anything out of this dialogue, because the enemy doesn't fear us. The people that are murdering us are arrogant enough to believe that they have a right to do this and that we are the criminals. Look at how the cops was talking to the people in Ferguson, calling them savages and animals. This is what they believe, that their way of life, that they are protecting a way of life and they're protecting themselves from animals and savages. That's what they believe. You know, and it goes right back to the old axiom that the white folks used when they took America. The only good savage is a dead savage. The only good Indian is a dead Indian. The only good nigga is a dead nigga. Okay? That's how they thought when they founded this country and it enslaved us. And that has permeated the institution of policing in America today. It hasn't gotten too far away from that. Okay? And so when we fail to realize where we came from and how we resisted all of these years, we haven't survived America because we just laid down and rolled over and said we're going to deal with the courts. We haven't survived America because Nat Turner didn't exist, because Denmark Vesey didn't strike terror in the hearts of white folks, because John Brown didn't strike terror in the hearts of white folks, that the Civil War wasn't fought a decidedly violent endeavor. If the Civil War wasn't fought and black folks weren't armed and got into the Civil War on behalf of the Union, which would have lost probably on a manpower tip, if that didn't happen, what discussion would we be having now? Right. So when people say to you that we only going to get killed, you know, that we only going to get this, I'm saying to you that you cannot bring anybody to the negotiating table for justice and being treated as an equal until there's funerals on both sides.
You listen to Contraband Classified Radio. Again, this is Kalonji Jamachanga with Daruba Ben Wahad speaking on the recent incidents across America dealing with police terrorism. In closing, Daruba, for folks who are into preventive medicine, for folks who want to know what could be done to avoid being murdered by police, if there's such a thing, what do you say? What are some of the solutions that you can suggest?
I would tell you what they tell you in jail in order to stay out of the box and in order not to get into any beef. They tell you in jail to drink plenty of water and walk slow.
I don't know if that's going to work here, right?
Well, if you got Al Sharpton and them leading you, you might as well drink plenty of water and walk slow, because you're going to be doing plenty of marching and you're going to have to be doing it for a long time and you're not going to achieve very much. So, you know, drink plenty of water and march slow.
All right. Brother, we appreciate your words. Anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
Well, you know, I'm saying this situation, it cannot be addressed in its entirety by one solution or one attitude or one analysis only. However, my point is that when you exclude an entire analysis and an entire tradition of resistance from the equation, then black folks don't have a clue about what they should, about what's available to them. What alternatives do they have? Black folks don't know that, for instance, the so-called BLA, the Black Liberation Army, wasn't just a bunch of a half a dozen or a dozen or 20 black young men and women running around the streets shooting cops. That wasn't what it is. The BLA had an whole network of people who had houses, who had jobs, who had community, who were community figures, who were entrepreneurs, who supported the underground. Materially supported the underground, and these people are unknown to this day. And so whenever resistance is portrayed as something adventuristic or something that's just emotional, we need to understand, in order to resist, you have to build a resistance movement. And a resistance movement means that you have to survive in a state of war. And you have to survive in a continuous state of repression, in a continuous state of restriction. And that's your movement. So now if we build the types of networks that could help us survive, we would have known who this policeman was. We would have knew where he lived the day he did it. We would have known everything there is to know about these individuals who are in our community with guns policing us. And they would know that we know, and therefore they would act accordingly. They think that they are immune. They think that they are anonymous. They think that they cannot be had. And as long as they think that way, we're going to keep revisiting this type of issue.
Right on. You've been listening to Contraband Classified Radio. Daruba, we appreciate you coming on today. And we'll have you on in the coming weeks, man, to see how this thing unfolds.
We done?